Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Wayfinders Church podcast. We're so glad that you're here. We are launching into a new series of podcasts all about science and religion. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, that's right. I said two naughty words. Science and religion. Anyway, we're so glad you're here. This week is going to be a fantastic one. We have some great stuff coming up in the life of Wayfinders. Specifically, we got market days this Saturday, and we're going to be making some awesome stuff out at City Square Park. Come check that out, 9 to 2, extended hours this week. And then it's Mother's Day, which is always a good time, which means if you haven't purchased something for your mother, or you're listening to this after Mother's Day and failed to do something for your mom, you're in trouble. With that in mind, we also missed an episode, so there is a lost episode somewhere about counter-narrative for our previous series, and we will find it and post it at some point in time.
Yes.
Yes. But until then, with me today is none other than the great, the fascinating, the scrupulous? I got nothing.
I don't.
Michael Pig.
I hope I'm scrupulous. Yeah. Doesn't that mean that you have scruples?
You have scruples.
Yeah, I think I do.
Of abundance.
Yes, abundant scruples. I feel bad for things I shouldn't feel bad for, so yeah, I'm scrupulous.
Okay. All right. Well, so glad that we get to do this, and we're going to try to do a bunch of these. So today we're going to do like more of an introduction. Are science and religion really at odds? We're going to break down some of that. And then in future episodes in this series, we're going to do an interview with a science teacher, Janie Evans. It's going to be a fascinating, fascinating interview. You won't want to miss that. We're also going to look at the science of soul. Where is your soul?
Ooh, that's an easy question.
Yeah. And then we have a couple of other topics that we'll jump into, like what is the Bible trying to do, what is science trying to do, and why are they trying to do what they're trying to do? So you've got to get into a little bit of history to come to any kind of understanding, and that's as vague as it ends up being.
Sure. Well, I mean, if we try to give an exhaustive answer to this, then we'll betray our purpose in even having this conversation. So.
That's right. That's right. So with that in mind, Michael, when you were growing up, when I was growing up, it seemed like there was a big fight between science and religion, or science and the church.
I remember my pastor doing a series on science and the Bible, and he was a scientist, and he did this thing where he talked about Behemoth and Leviathan, these commentaries from the Old Testament, and how that was a picture of dinosaurs in the Old Testament. And I remember as a kid going, or I was a teenager at the time, and I remember thinking, yeah, I don't think that answers the question for me. but there was always this tension, and I remember there were television shows where it tried to explain how the Bible had actually addressed things that science was uncovering, and then it would quote like the Psalms or some random verse in one of the minor prophets, you know, and it was almost as crazy as like some of the times when aliens are described, you know, well, that circle within a circle in Daniel, that's talking about a spaceship coming down, you know, and I just remember thinking, yeah, I don't know if the Bible's that kind of book. And so I think that's kind of where we are in this conversation. What kind of book are we holding when we hold the Bible? Or we try to treat it like a textbook sometimes, like a history book, like it's like a book of facts. But it's really weird because when I'm reading along, all of a sudden it goes to this strange indentation, like that I don't see in textbooks. Like I've never been reading a science textbook and it launched into a poem, you know, or at least the ones I had when I was a kid. They didn't launch into a poem, but scripture tends to launch into a poem or a song or song lyrics.
Yeah, and you're hitting on something that we're definitely going to get into as this series opens up, but what science is trying to do, mm-hmm. and what the church is trying to do.
Yeah.
Neither one can do for each other. So if science is wanting to boil down what is the essence of the best fact that we can surmise at this point.
Right.
At this right. juncture with what we can figure out, what is the most accurate fact?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I did in youth ministry for 12 years. I was trying to help kids get from the answer they had to a better answer.
Right.
You know, not like the answer, but a better answer than the one you currently have.
And what's interesting about that is it's not ascribing meaning to the facts.
Science doesn't ascribe the
meaning to the facts. So what does? Is it sociology? Is it your own just consciousness? Is it...
Yeah.
Religion, on the other hand, is attempting to ascribe a meaning-oriented understanding to the world that we experience.
Yeah.
And so we have grown up in an environment where not only were they diametrically opposed.
Sure. There was a lot of hate talk.
Yeah, but a lot of misunderstanding on both sides.
Sure. Like, not even listening to one another's arguments. It was more like in any argument that I was ever in, I was just waiting for my turn to talk, not actually listening to the other person's argument,
That's
you know?
So good.
You know, I just waiting for them to take a breath so that I could tell them how wrong they were, you know? And I remember, even as a young person, that I had a conversation with a guy who was, he was an evolutionist. Like, right. He just believed that evolution made sense. Now, you know, he attended church. He'd been in Sunday school his whole life. He and I were friends, and we often talked about faith. But when science would come up and he would talk about evolution, for whatever reason, I had been informed that to talk about evolution was to, you know, sort of slap God in the face. And so I was just had this guttural response. I didn't even understand my response. I just responded the way that I thought I was supposed to. And not really because I had any vested interest in the conversation, but because I was worried that I would get judged by others if I didn't pass judgment on the evolutionist.
You know? Because you were somehow defending the rightness of the faith.
Right, yeah. God made it. God, you know,
if there is such a thing.
Yeah, like gators is mad because they got all them teeth and no toothbrush. No, they're mad because they're medulla oblongata. Well, what do you know, Mr. Colonel Sanders? You know, like from
Waterboy,
you know, and Adam Sandler, you know, makes a big joke of the whole thing. But really, that was kind of my argument. It was more emotionally based than it was, you know, from any kind of facts.
Yeah.
And there's lots of people who've studied the facts and they've worked up all the facts. But I think we get into this place where the word fact gets thrown around, but nobody's real sure what a fact is and what a fact isn't, you know? And so defining fact, like, that shouldn't be something that we have to redefine over and over. Well, what is a fact? Well,
okay. So now we've kind of ushered ourselves into this question.
Uh-huh.
Is truth relative?
Ooh. See, and that's scary.
Right? Because, yeah. Because science is attempting to say, post-Enlightenment science especially, that truth is not relative. Now, let me trace some things with you, okay? There was a period of time, pre-Jesus, okay, that people believed the basic elements that made up everything were fire,
water.
Wind and earth.
Earth.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And then add heart. And when our powers combine, I am Captain Planet. so here in this situation, the basic elements, the fundamental elements that made anything were of the essence of those things. Well, fast forward and, you know, basic science happening later, those aren't the basic elements. But now we think that the world still revolves, or that everything revolves around the world, mm-hmm. rather than the world revolving around a sun. We thought that the world was flat. All of these things were true. They were held as true. And there's a physicist turned philosopher named Thomas Kuhn who wrote a little book called The Rules of Scientific Revolution.
Yeah.
And basically explained how science is just another faith language.
Right.
So things are held true until they're not true because better science is available. Because more truth is available.
Right.
Which reveals that was only partly true or somewhat true or conditionally true, but now this is a more accurate understanding.
Sure.
And so you hold your faith in this being true until it's not true anymore.
Right.
And the same thing happens when we're talking about our experiences with God, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the scriptures, there's this thing, you know, pre-conventional wisdom, post-conventional wisdom, and conventional wisdom.
Right.
Pre-conventional wisdom is, I don't care about anything anyway. I want my way, and I want my way now because it appeases me.
Sure. It's about appetites.
It's basic. I'm hungry. I eat food. Right? Conventional wisdom says kind of like, if so facto, cause effect, if I do this, then that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I follow these rules, I get blessings. When I don't follow these rules, I get curses.
Right.
Post-conventional wisdom says, now the rules are good because the rules are good, but you actually might get blessed or you might get cursed.
Yeah.
There are times where it seems appropriate to, like, you know, go for your appetite, but shouldn't you also be concerned with the appetites of others?
Sure.
So what you see in this is that there are different phases along the way. And what we've talked about this early on earlier episodes, but what's at stake is the deeper loyalty.
Yeah.
Right? So science's deeper loyalty is not to what we currently hold true.
Right.
Otherwise, we would never change anything.
Well, right.
Right?
Right. Nothing would ever be allowed to shift.
The end of discovery, the end of knowledge, we would be done.
The problem then, right. So then the answer is the better answer. Like, I'm looking for a better answer. The problem is that human beings tend towards a belief that they can be objective. Right?
Yes.
Like, I can be objective. And so, but the truth is, and, you know, I was been thinking about Carl Sagan and... he wrote a book, and they turned into a movie called Contact, and Jodie Foster was in it. And, you know, and basically she just believed that everything she did had to be objective. There was no room for belief. It had to be proven. But in the storyline, she has to come to this place where she exercises a belief because she has no proof, but she experienced it. And so this arrogance that pretends like our knowledge is not based in some subjectivity is foolishness.
Yes.
And so whether it's a faith-based belief or a scientific belief, if we let enough arrogance in so that we think that what I've just said cannot be proven wrong, or that there's not a better answer than the one I currently hold, then it becomes a very dangerous world to live in, and we begin holy wars and start killing each other over who's right and who's wrong.
Right. Or my interpretation is better than your interpretation.
Sure. I've got a specific spin on it that makes me better than you.
Which also begs into the question, what and how, what is the Bible and how to read it, right? Which we don't have time to explore episode.
Sure.
But what we find here then is that the conversation, rather than being against each other in science or religion, is actually for each other because each are trying to do a different side of the same coin.
Sure. Absolutely. Like, I've heard incredibly scientific things made sense of. Like, I've seen scientists try to explain something, and the math, you know, for the layman is no good, right? Like, if you put an equation up on the board using that as the language that explains something to me, I don't understand the math, So there's no way I can fully understand the thing. And so in an attempt to understand it, I've had scientists and scientifically minded people take those numbers and turn them into a story for me and use poetry to bring understanding to a situation for me. And actually, you know, in evaluating these things, we often find enlightenment when we apply poetry to and try to tell story that explains the science that we're dealing with. We often find enlightenment through that. And in the same way, the deeper that I plunge into the scientific understanding of things, the more complicated things become, and I and my faith is given bolstering by the complexity of life. Not to, oh, we can explain away life, because we can't explain away life. Every time we think we've found the smallest particle, we break it open and we find something smaller and more complex. Yeah. And this, I mean, it takes a lot of faith to keep exploring those things, whether you're coming from a scientific method or from a faith method. The beauty of it is the journey is and so, but I need help from a scientist to understand these things. And arguably, the scientist, because they are human, is going to need some poetry along the way to help make this make sense.
Now, here's what's interesting that you've brought up, and it's something from our notes that we definitely need to explore.
Okay,
That is language.
Sure.
Right, because science is one language with one type of set of rules tied to it,
mm-hmm.
and religion is another language with other rules tied to it, and depending on what science you're in, mm-hmm. it's different languages.
Sure.
It's different. So if you're talking about, you know, molecular biology, or if you're talking about quantum physics, they're using different equations and different understandings, mm-hmm. and yet they're using the same method to achieve what is the most accurate fact.
Right.
And both of them are diving into the mystery.
Sure.
And both of them start with, I doubt this, but I think this. Mm-hmm. But I'm not certain until we can act upon it and figure it out.
Right.
Which is faith.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of experiments where the outcome is, we still don't have enough information to answer this. And so we've been running the same kind of experiment, just adjusting variables for years and years, with the same set of doubts, with the same set of hopes, right? I mean, like, sometimes science keeps performing the same experiment in hopes that is a very poetic thing, and it's a very human thing. It's very subjective.
Right.
Right. You can't claim objectivity and hope for some outcome.
But it's also objective because they're changing one variable
at a time. Right. But there's still, it's a human being running the experiment. It's not a machine running the experiment. It's not something without emotions running the experiment.
Well, which begs the question, even for machines running experiments, how many times has your computer frozen up or stopped doing what it's supposed to do?
Sure.
Because some other piece of code somewhere crashed somehow?
Well, by that same question, how many times has your religion frozen up and couldn't complete the equation?
Right.
You know, I mean, because to pretend like faith and religion don't have equations of their own, you know, like, you talked about that earlier. I mean, the whole book of Job is this break. What happens when the equation breaks down? You know, like, what's going on there? The wisdom literature, the sages are like, I did the formula and it didn't work. I mean, John Wesley was a Methodist.
The blessings,
you know,
and curses didn't work out for me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, John Wesley, the Methodist, right, had his method for doing things. And there's a point in his career where he said that just sort of broke down. And he has this moment that he can't really describe in terms of an algorithm. He just says, my heart was strangely warmed. Like, what does that mean? Like, if you were following John Wesley and you were a Methodist, it'd be really hard to incorporate my heart was strangely warmed into any equation. It's some...
Where did that happen in the path exactly? Like, is that the point where your heart gets warmed up?
Yeah. Yeah. You start adding it to your method, you know, and you're like, yeah, this is the moment. Well, you'd always be trying to identify the moment and never quite certain because there's so much subjectivity in a statement like that, you know. So to pretend like either one of them has the answer nailed down is to say, I mean, for a religious person, would be to say, I've got God nailed down. Well, that's not, I'm not cool with that. I'm not, that would be terribly dissatisfying.
So, you know? So one of the questions that's going to come out in this is, what does progress look like then? Because science is trying to progress through more accurate fact, mm-hmm. right? Faith is trying to progress by a more comprehensive embrace of mystery.
Yeah, there's almost this, the only way to get it is to let go and realize that it's that there is this mystery that you can't fully grasp.
So in that sense, maybe they are opposed, but by and large, the opposition that people feel between the two is because both are claiming that they're right in their way of understanding,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
And progress then happens, right? So people used to fight about everything revolving around the Earth. Copernicus comes
sure.
on.
Sure. I mean, people were...
And it's another 200 years, right, before Galileo?
People were put to death as heretics in the church because of that conversation. Yeah.
And so, not Copernicus, Kaplan. My history is failing me right now. Anyway, if you're listening, message us on which one got it. Okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. The point being, how does that progress then happen? When you hold one set of ideas, one set of truths, how do you progress to the next one? Because if they're not opposed to each other and they're actually complementary to each other, how then do we progress? Do we become a more full, a more understanding, a better consciousness, a more, like, how do we progress? And I would argue that it's always in the disorientation.
Okay.
Because what disorientation does is says, that set of facts didn't keep working in this scenario.
Right. So it requires a confession.
Absolutely.
And that's a move. Any confession is always a move towards humility. And so if arrogance is what keeps getting us in this problem, then a move towards humility is what would get us out of this problem.
Right, right. So future episodes, we're going to talk about what is the Bible and what is it trying to do?
Right.
Versus what is the scientific method and what is it trying to do?
Sure, sure.
We didn't actually dive fully into that today.
No, we didn't get to.
We're going to be doing an interview with a scientist.
Yep.
And then we're also going to get a little mystical. Mystical?
Mystical, I think, is the word you're looking for.
Mysteriousness? My vocabulary is failing me.
Yep. Your history, your vocab. You need a cup of coffee.
I've already had three today. Yeah. I need even more, apparently. and then dive into kind of the science of soul, the psychology of religion. What exactly? How are we interconnected? And we could talk about that from, you know, the quantum level.
Quantum entanglement.
We could talk about that from an atomic level, like, you know,
DNA
the particles that are in you that are in the tree and uh-huh. how, like, while you're listening to this podcast, 100 million cells in your body died and replaced themselves.
Sure. So that's at a molecular level.
Right. Like all these different things that are, like, the connection and kind of, Where is your soul?
Sure. Yeah, that's a hard conversation.
As if we can answer that.
Yeah, we can't.
But some of the conversations that are going to come around this, we feel like are going to help you with your faith. So for today, my friends, if you grew up in a world where you could not merge, marry, converse, or even be in the same room with people who thought scientifically because of faith or the other way around,
mm-hmm.
let me just say I'm sorry. On behalf of whichever group was excluding the other, on behalf of whichever group was leading with so much arrogance to think that they've figured everything out. And let me say this specifically. This is where science has started to shine. There was a period of time where science was just as stubborn as the religious folk.
Mm-hmm.
The embracing of doubt is what causes a better answer.
Sure, it makes us explorers.
And and so deeply rooted in the conversation of science versus religion is the need for doubt. So if you have been like, well, there's no room for doubt in religion.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because that's that is an arrogance that's the opposite of arrogance.
Sure.
Right? People don't call that an arrogance, but it is in fact, because it's so far the other way, it is its own arrogance.
Yeah.
Like, because I've got it all figured out, I don't need to rehash that. I don't need to reopen that. There's not more to understand.
Right. If it's not an arrogance, then it's a laziness or a cowardice. So, I mean, in any direction you go with that, it becomes detrimental to the human person if we just say, I've got it figured out.
Let's put that in relational context for people, right? Let's try to make this just very real. If you started a marriage relationship with someone, if you got married, and you said, well, we got married, that's enough.
That's it.
Like, I don't have to work on my relationship, I don't have to communicate, I don't have to include, I don't have to alter my plans.
Right.
I can just still keep doing whatever I want to do, when I want to do it, how I want to do it.
Yeah.
How long is your marriage going to be healthy?
Right. Not long. The essential nature of relationship is, and anybody will tell you this, the most important thing in any marriage, in any relationship, in any kind of covenant situation, is communication. And so if we have doubts, then then doubt is not the enemy of, like as we were talking earlier, is not the enemy of faith, but the silence is. The silence surrounding my doubt is the dangerous part. And so in the marriage relationship, my grievances, unvoiced, become a bitterness that won't find healing.
Mm. And it may require you learning a new language.
It might. Yeah, definitely.
Whether you're looking into an equation that you can't solve, mm-hmm. because you don't even know what the symbols mean.
Right.
Or whether it's a poem that you just, you don't understand. That parable makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what?
Yeah.
So, your doubt, curiosity, the embracement of the conversation will cause a disorientation that on the other side produces something even better. But the reason we talk about this as a journey or as an evolution, did I mix a bad word?
Yeah.
The reason why we talk about it like that is because it's not static. There is no arrival. There's just a more complete picture.
Sure.
So if you've had an encounter with Jesus and you think that that is the only way to encounter Jesus, let me disorient you for a minute. There's more. If you have come to a fact about something and you stop exploring the history, the direction, the complexity, the breakdowns, you have failed to do good science. You've failed to do good faith, and yet you've exercised good faith because you've believed something.
Mm-hmm.
So, my friends, science, religion, they're not opposed or against each other. They're both trying to understand and orient who we are as people in light of what they can see and what they cannot see. If you've been hurt by either group because of its arrogance, I'm sorry. If you have not taken the time to learn a new language, I'm sorry. And now, my friends, may you get curious. May you walk through disorientation. And as we explore these topics, may you walk with grace, knowing that you might be at a different spot on a journey than someone else. Much love, my friends.